Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. It is the 2nd of March. We're in a new month, and, well, we couldn't be happier.
No, we couldn't be happier. It's coming in like a lion. It's going out like a lion.
Absolutely. No. Mm-hmm. Wham.
There'll be snow in April. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're right.
I want to go back to bed.
All right. Well, you can't yet because we have work to do. Let's
nicely put.
Thank you. We're going to talk about the issues of the day, and we welcome your input. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Let me introduce our panel, all official like, to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir, to you.
Very nice to have you here.
Very nice to be here.
Political consultant Libby Post joins us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
And SUNY Albany professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I was reading through the paper this weekend, and I see all of these International Women's Day is on March 8th. And shouldn't every day be International Women's Day?
Absolutely. Yes.
One would be nice.
So on Sunday, March 8th, and our very own Rosemary is going to be the keynote speaker at the event in at Russell Sage at the Opelka Gallery.
Yep.
Oh, and nice. You're going to be the, it's from 2 to 5, and do you know what time you're speaking?
3.
3 o'clock. So that'll be very cool. So Rosemary will be.
And anybody who ever really wanted to see Rosemary, of course, you could do it on here.
Right. And Mayor Sheehan.
I'm going to try to be rabble rousing.
Really? That's so unlike you.
I know. I thought I'd do something different.
Thanks.
So we look forward to that. If you want to find out more information, go to sage.edu/Opelka, and you can find out more information on Rosemary, or just call her. She'll tell you.
For a good time at a speech, call.
Call. I can see that on a bathroom wall.
Right,
for International Women's Day.
That was not what I was thinking.
That's funny.
That's my face. Can you tell?
It is. Well,
yeah, there's a poster
Let the record show.
There's a poster going around.
Libby held up a poster. This is radio, Libby.
I know it is, but it does look like
it. It shows the profile of a woman looking off into the distance with her eyes closed, and she's got a perfect unlined face, obviously taken from one of my portraits.
Absolutely.
Why are her eyes closed?
I don't know.
She's dreaming of what life could be.
What it should be like.
With true quality.
There you go.
Right.
Oh, okay.
he says.
No, I'm trying to figure out my issues here. Let's get into what's going on in the world this morning, and we begin with the tragedy that happened in Russia, and the slain critic of Vladimir Putin. Russians turned out by the tens of thousands Sunday to mourn an opposition leader who was murdered only a few steps from the Kremlin amid fears that his death was just the beginning of a new wave of violence. Defiant crowds waving Russia's tricolor flag and carrying signs reading propaganda kills filed through Moscow's heart on a grim, drizzly afternoon, making a pilgrimage to the spot where Boris Nemtsov?
Yes.
Thank you. Was gunned down under the Kremlin's watchful towers. The killing was the highest profile political assassination in Russia during the 15-year rule of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, devastating news. And Putin's take on it is that it's an act of provocation. Somebody, some group wants to make him look bad, make his reign look bad. Unbelievable. And I actually don't think he did it. That was the word at first. He took over the investigation, and everyone laughed at the irony of that. But I really don't think he did it. I think this is a result of his campaign,
incredible. He set up the climate.
Yes, yeah. He totally set up a climate of hate and opposition, and this is a result of it.
Yeah, he didn't do it, but his fingerprints are on it.
Oh, yeah. And the other irony of it is it has indeed made a martyr of this guy. Do we ever hear of him before this? Not very much.
Well,
and
they had heard of him.
Yeah, they certainly
yeah,
have. Absolutely.
The opposition, yeah.
But now they had allegedly 50,000 people at the memorial to him on this weekend. So it's stirred up. We're back to the level of protests, what, 5 years ago, right after his, after Putin's last election?
Well, we'll have to see how much tolerance the system at this stage of the game will have. It was one thing to end communism. It was another thing. But this guy is now the sort of new Stalin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And interestingly about the assassinated guy was that he had two Jewish parents, but he had switched religions.
He has a Ukrainian girlfriend, too. Yeah. He's much more of a Western-looking. Yeah. He's open.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the specter, of course, of anti-Semitism, which has been long alive, you know, in both the Soviet era and the Russian era, is there. But it is really, I think is going to be defining in terms of Putin's future. You know, if millions come out, not 50,000, Putin is going to be in a bad spot.
Well, his economy is in a bad spot. He has drummed up lots of internal support. People who say what he's doing in Ukraine and Eastern Europe is great. They're all for nationalism. And this is, you know, the first huge crack we've seen that, hey, maybe that's not exactly what other people are thinking there. So it's dangerous to him. But he's put down lots of revolts and dissent before this. This isn't the first time. He's kind of good at this, unfortunately.
It's that KGB training.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's that idea that, as Libby said, you know, the fingerprints are all over it. You know how it's going to look, and you don't care.
Right.
He doesn't.
How bold is that?
Right.
On a bridge, close to the Kremlin, broad daylight, he's walking along holding his girlfriend's hand. Yeah, that's pretty bold.
Yeah. And that's just a sniper from somewhere. Mm-hmm.
And he said, by the way, he had told friends, they don't dare because it's just too open and... But of course they did dare, and I think that's the whole point. I mean, one can't say that Putin did it, but certainly he set up the climate, which we have agreed on.
I agree.
And certainly, as a former KGB guy, he has exhibited all of the sort of neo-Stalinist stuff that we came to expect of the old Soviets.
Well, he's the 21st century Stalin. I mean, it's just that simple. He's a fascist. He wants total control, giving everything over to the oligarchs in terms of monetary power. You know, the people, only the people who made it, who were able to make some money and create some wealth of their own, are being paid attention to.
But Libby, only
Ukraine.
The ones that he approved of.
Mm-hmm.
Not the ones that made the money and somehow defied him, because they go to jail.
Oh, no, he wants a piece of all of the action.
Yeah, as long as he gets his 10%, I'm sure
organized,
he'll be fine.
Classic organized crime, you're right.
Maybe even 15.
But we don't have to worry because George Bush looked into his eyes.
I know, and says he's a hell of a guy.
He must rue that comment.
How
would you like to be Ukraine dealing with him, too? I mean, we have him from across a globe, and they're under attack by him.
But isn't it unbelievable that the Ukrainians keep at it? I mean, I heard this morning on the Beeb, I think 6,000 people so far are dead.
Yeah.
And yet, there must be some sort of nationalism that just keeps them going.
A desire for freedom, and you don't get that if you're under Moscow's rule.
No.
No. Right.
Putin has now held one of their government administrators is in Moscow. He's now being held for questioning.
The girlfriend's being held.
Yeah, she can't. She's not allowed to travel.
She's not allowed to leave. It's like, oh, come on. It's just like rounding everybody up. Yeah. The gulag's going to get repopulated soon.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will move on to other issues. We'll get some letters, and we'll talk more. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Allardyce Ace Building Supply, providing lumber and building supplies for commercial and home needs with locations in Malta, Saratoga Springs, and Milton, New York. Allardyce.com. And Mango Tree Imports, announcing their new location in the Saratoga Marketplace, 454 Broadway, Saratoga Springs, New York. Open 7 days a week, mangotreeimports.com.
Thank you.
have a few minutes before the break, and I want to we're going to talk about Common Core arriving, and we're going to talk about that, and I just want to leave plenty of time for that, because I'm sure you all have lots to say.
A little bit of interest.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yes. Okay. So, but let us talk about Netanyahu, Secretary of State John Kerry, spoke yesterday, and
The Times had such an interesting story on
which allowed them to use the phrase "Kerry is wary," which I just, you know, whatever. Secretary of State John Kerry tried to lower the temperature on Sunday in the three-way fight among congressional Republicans, the Obama administration, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, saying that Mr. Netanyahu was welcome to speak in the United States, but he did say that it was odd, if not unique.
Well,
he's the diplomat. He said it nicer than Susan Rice did the other day.
Yeah. I mean, the article I was referring to, Joe, and I think I read it in the Times, said that the Democrats are really divided on this one, mm-hmm. that they're in a bad spot. But I think a lot of them are showing strong. I thought Dianne Feinstein, for example.
Dianne Feinstein was great.
Yeah, she was terrific. You know, there was this longstanding thing that because those of us who were Jewish would always support Israel no matter what they did. That divides Democrats who are on both sides of that mm-hmm. issue.
So tell people what Dianne Feinstein did.
Well, she basically said he doesn't speak for me. And I like that very much. I thought she was gutsy.
And if you go to the AIPAC meeting, there are plenty of progressive Jews at the AIPAC meeting this time around, and he's not speaking for them, and mm-hmm. he's not speaking for...
AIPAC is the lobby.
The American-Israeli Political Action Committee. And I don't know if he's really speaking for the majority of Israelis anymore.
There's an interesting piece done in Jerusalem about how this is just a diversion. He is in trouble at home,
yes.
and it's on housing policies and other domestic issues. And that in that classic move, we always criticize our presidents for this. He's in trouble at home, so he goes overseas.
I'm not so sure how much trouble he's in. I mean, I'm not a real student of what goes on in Israel, but we're about to have an election, days away, and I think he's going to win. He's going to win because in the end, the Israeli population thinks that he'll, you know, take care of them and against the Arabs who want to come in and push them into the sea. They don't see a way out. They don't see an alternative.
I think there are plenty of people who are not going to vote for him, but he has a very close tie with the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox community who are becoming more and more of a voting bloc because they keep having kids. And those kids get a voting age, and they vote the way they're told to vote. And he really, the rabbis, the chief rabbis, the Orthodox rabbis there have him in their pockets.
I hope he loses. There are no Israeli leaders who are soft on the Arab issue. So the idea of being protected would be covered by anyone that they put in. He has put into place policies that studies show have made Israel more susceptible than at any time in their history, settlements being one of them. So he's not solid on this. He's gotten criticism from intelligence people and leaders who have come out oddly. They don't normally do that.
Them, right.
Yeah, who have said, no, he's not protecting us. So I do think he's more vulnerable than we think. I don't know. The polls are close, but you're the believer in polls, not me. I think they don't tell the whole story. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I am a believer in polls because polls have a way of being right all the time in elections. So
yeah, the ones that close at 9 o'clock. But
no, I'm not talking about those polls. Okay. Yeah, right.
But you know, it's. I just had a train of thought and it just
left
me.
Happens.
It happens. It's the getting older part of this. But it's interesting. You know, Boehner did this to put the Democrats in a really awkward position. To make the president look weak, to split, to try and show that the United States really isn't a close and strong ally of Israel. And the United States will always be a close and strong ally of Israel because it's to our advantage. It's the only democratically elected, mostly sane country in the region. Mm-hmm. Most of those other countries, save for perhaps Jordan and maybe Egypt on occasion, would like to push Israel into the sea, would like to push all of Western reality into the sea. And so, you know, this is not going to work to the Republicans' advantage as much as they would have liked it to. And the Jewish community in the United States is split on this as well. I mean, I feel a little schizophrenic at times regarding this whole issue. And, you know, but what's the bottom line here?
So what's the nature of the schizophrenia for you? You know, I know that you're the president of a major congregation in our area and all the rest of it, but what is the schizophrenia?
The schizophrenia is the not wanting to be supportive of a government that is oppressive. And at times, the Israeli government, I'm going to get in so much trouble, is oppressive to the Palestinians. On the other hand, the Palestinians hate the Israelis and send bombs into Israel. So it's understandable, the response. The problem really comes down to is when there are incidences like we had last summer when the bombings are happening and the media really casts the Palestinians as the victims and doesn't look at what's going on in Israel all that much. The fomenting of anti-Zionism and the hatred for Israel turns into, because it is one and the same, it's a distinction without a difference, anti-Semitism. We see it in Europe. The rise of anti-Semitism in Europe is rampant. You know, you might have Le Pen be the president of France. She's a rampant anti-Semite. You know, the Nazis, the right is on the rise there. The Jews are being blamed. And that cannot be allowed to happen. It just can't be allowed to happen. So Israel needs to exist. There's no two ways about it. I just wish there was a way for us to go back to the future, to 1948, and have the Arab countries say yes to a two-state solution with an economic right. union between the two, and know. We'd have a much better world that we'd be living in. Mm.
Yep.
The problem, of course, is that many of the Arab leaders who are so adamantly opposed to Israel know that if they ever accommodate Israel, they're out as a leader.
Right.
This is the way they get their jobs and keep their jobs.
Right.
And that's tough.
Well, that's the whole thing about politics.
I think
politics
you were very articulate in your... I mean it.
But that's the whole thing about political leaders. Their job is to get reelected. Their job isn't to lead.
We are going to take a break there, and we'll come back and talk about other issues, including Common Core, there you go, and other things. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll take your letters as well, wamc.org/roundtable or roundtable@wamc.org. Alan Shartok, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, we welcome your calls. You know, you're just your emails. Don't call us. We won't answer. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion and our panel this morning. We welcome you to be a part of it. All you have to do is write to us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. And you can also go to wamc.org/roundtable, and that is where we have the panel posted. It'll say a panel discussion and have today's date, which is March 2nd. So it'll say 3/2/15, and you could click on that and comment there and all will be right with the world. We welcome you, and we got a lot of letters, especially on Israel, and we will begin there.
Julia says, the Ukraine Azov and Adar battalions, which have been considered the most effective opposition to the separatists, are known to have deep fascist and neo-Nazi roots. Is it really a good idea to provide arms to these groups? Is our anti-Putin sentiments blinding us to actions that can easily backfire? And then Franz says, is it possible to oppose the Netanyahu government without being anti-Israel or anti-Semitic?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. To suggest otherwise would be to deny Israelis and Israel's allies constructive criticism and input on policy. Netanyahu has to go. Israel, with our staunch support, is here to stay.
Oh, good letter.
Don says, although I understand and support Israel's need to respond to Palestinian terrorist attacks, I also have great sympathy for the suffering of Palestinian civilians This suffering is a direct consequence of the failure of Palestinian leadership to offer its citizens a vision for the future, which involves peace with Israel. And that's as much as I can do today for you, Don, because it's a little longer. And then we say, Kenner says, I heard that Prime Minister Netanyahu responded this morning to Senator Dianne Feinstein by saying he speaks for all sentient beings, including gefilte fish and turtles. Mitch McConnell thanked Netanyahu for the turtle part. I just read them. I have no idea what. I'm out of it. And then John says, love the their people, hate their government. He's talking about Israel. Sound familiar? This is how much of the like world feels about the United States, so I am told.
That's
okay.
Good. And love the sinner, hate the sin.
And Ryan says, I'm in favor of Israel's existence, but I think it's difficult to deny that Israel doesn't help us help its cause when it kills civilians. I understand its need to defend itself. But so often it seems like right-wing extremists get elected in that country, and rather than reconsider territorial policies, they cling to an antiquated policy. Well, you know, Ryan, it's easy to say, but the truth of the matter is they come over the border and they kill Israelis.
Right, remember
Israelis.
Those tunnels and, you know, the bombs all, you know, from Hamas and Hezbollah this summer, so come on.
Yeah, there is that. And and then Jonathan says, please post on your website the studies that Rosemary referred to that said that Netanyahu policies have made Israel less safe. I would be willing to wager that anything these studies do come from objective sources.
Okay.
And on. Going back to the top. And Vin says, the issue isn't whether Netanyahu is right-wing zealot. He is. The question is whether or not he is the type of visionary leader that can take Israel into the future and thrive in a world with less violence. Think Begin and Sadat. And I guess that's sort of it for now.
All right. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us go to other issues. And today is the day that Common Core arrives. There we go. Thank you very much.
I thought it's been here for a while.
A new wave of standardized exams designed to assess whether students are learning in step with the Common Core standards is sweeping the country, arriving this week in classrooms in several states and entering the crosshairs of various political movements. In New Jersey and elsewhere, the arrival has been marked with well-organized opposition, a spate of television attack ads, and a cascade of parental anxiety. Almost every state has an opt-out movement. Its true size is hard to gauge, but the protests on Facebook, at school board meetings, and in more creative venues, including screenings of anti-testing documentaries, have caught the attention of education officials. So some school superintendents have bemoaned the exams, while others have warned that they were obligatory, and even parents who share in the antipathy toward the tests are torn by the implications of formally allowing their children to bow out of them. So basically, you have, here are the standards. We're going to this is what we're going to teach you. Now we're going to test you on it, see how you do. Do you want to opt out of the test? Do you not want to opt out of the test? So this is where we get the first results of what has been going on.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand what's so bad about Common Core. I feel sort of like the Keystone Pipeline story, that there was nothing seemingly wrong with this, and then suddenly there's this avalanche of opposition. And that's happened with Common Core, too. I mean, yes, standardized tests, and maybe you shouldn't evaluate teachers based on 30%, which was the original amount. But why is it evil and your kids can't go near the test? Because federal government wants to take over education? I don't believe that. Explain this to me.
Well, look, when Common Core began, it was supported by a lot of people, left and right, middle. There was a sense that this is a good thing. We want to have standards that everybody meets. And if they're not meeting them, and then it began. It was like Obamacare, right. You know, it's bad. And pretty soon, people who knew nothing began to say, you know, this is bad. Now, there are many leading educators who are very good who think that we have over-relied on testing in this country, that people teach to the test, that they don't allow individualism. And that is one of the reasons why we have to be very concerned with the whole movement, testing movement. I'm married to one who believes other than that, who does not, who believes that, you know, there are lots of ways to teach. And she keeps reminding me that I've done all right in life, but I would not be doing well if, you know, if it was only about testing.
We all took Regents.
We did.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm like, yeah. I don't get it.
And well, the Iowa tests in elementary school.
And we didn't all take the Regents, tests. By the way. Yeah.
Well, some of us got out of them when they were they were stolen. It was a wonderful thing.
No, I was a Pennsylvania boy. We didn't have Regents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I got
in New York, and I have a friend who's an educator. She's a principal. And she says, you know, Common Core in itself isn't bad. It was the rollout. It was the way it was introduced in New York State that was fumbled pretty
well.
Badly. And the other part of this is, for me, is, okay, so we've got this Common Core going on. We've got the teachers union. We've got people going up against the teachers union. We're having all of this animus around public education. And so then the charter schools can just like slide right in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people don't recognize that there are consequences to all of this. And we can't dilute our public schools. We need to strengthen our public schools. You know, I went to public school. I got a good education.
Yeah,
you went.
I did
you went.
Too.
You got. Yep. You got free CUNY.
No, I went to Hunter, know, for free.
Right.
And I have to say that. But I remember the Regents very, very
so
well.
So do I.
And I remember that you carried around a little orange book with you, which had all of the
tests,
all of the exams, tests from the past years.
Yeah.
So if you just, you know, what it did was to test a set of facts as opposed to the ability to think, right? So
yeah, but the thing is, your other work tested your ability to think. You write essays, you write papers, you do projects, you make presentations.
But if you didn't pass the Regents, even if you were great in class, you didn't pass. You couldn't. That was the rule.
Well, I came close to failing one of my Regents, and I still.
Well, come close is not
68 on my math.
Well, 68 is a very respect.
Grade.
That's very respectable.
Confession time.
Oh yeah, I say it all the time when I get up and have to sit and do math in my head. I
you
say,
know, I did great on all these exams, and I remember what's so wrong with teaching to the test. I did bad at 1 year in map reading, so I went out and learned how to read maps. Isn't that the idea of it? If you have good teachers, they can work with tests. I think this has become a political football, and it makes me nervous because I would rather have educators figure out how to just best educate kids than a bunch of crazy parents who are worried about the federal government tromping on their rights.
That's the Rosemary Armeo, who you just heard say that.
Right, but there's a curriculum. And
is that the sound of our email system crashing? Is that what
that is? Well, and I support teachers. My son is a teacher. I love them. I think they are really handcuffed, but I don't think it's the test that's handcuffing them. I think it's
budget cuts.
Right. Let's talk about inequality of funding for education. That's a whole different story.
It's about Andrew Cuomo embarrassing last week all of those failing districts.
Yep.
I mean, that really is great for morale.
Well, no, I have great differences with Andrew Cuomo. I know this may be, you know, I think his thing about attacking teachers is outrageous. And I think the idea that teachers in our most at-risk schools, who are heroes as far as I'm concerned.
Because they go to work every day.
Hey, anybody can teach in Scarsdale. I mean, I think, you know, it's very important. I'm not putting down Scarsdale teachers at all and upscale districts. But the real heroes here are people who go in and talk teach in areas where the parents aren't as supportive of education as they might be, not all of them, where the kids have a real problem learning. And there is no way that you can really test for how effective those teachers are compared to the ones who are in affluent school districts. Mm-hmm. And I think it's outrageous of Cuomo to do this. I do.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. We'll come back and move on to other issues. We'll tackle a few letters and talk about other stuff. We welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts, reminding listeners that shivering signals the body to produce extra heat and grow a winter coat, hampvet.com. And Binghamton University's Center of Excellence, advancing research in electronics packaging, solar power, flexible electronics, and green data centers, binghamton.edu/S3IP.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We love when you write us, roundtable@wamc.org, and Alan will share the love and read some of the letters.
Yeah, well, Mark wrote, from the increasing popularity of the far-right movement in Europe to the assassination of Putin's opposition leader in Moscow, for all the progress we've seen in our lifetimes, doesn't it seem like the world is slipping backwards? Thanks, from Mark. Let's see. No, I...
Okay, fine.
Go to the top there, because there's a lot of Common Core stuff.
Common Core. Thank you for that, Joe.
Sure. Here to help.
Okay. And Jason says, schools. I don't think you can have individualism, in quotes, in schools if parents don't have choice. Testing should provide data which allows management to assess a problem, whether a problem is in school or at home. I'll never forget that 11th grader I tutored a few years ago who couldn't solve for X because he didn't know 24 could be divided by 6.
Wow.
Yeah, this happens, and that's from Jason. And
but that doesn't mean all teachers are bad.
No.
It does.
No, indeed. Common Core, says Richard, does not present a threat from the government. The threat is a takeover by corporations who produce, publish the tests, as well as the materials students use to study for the tests, and materials teachers must purchase to prepare the students. These same corporations then score the tests according to the standards they invent. That's from Richard. And then, let's see, Mike says, just a reminder to listeners that homeschooling is also an option. And that's from Mike. Did you make a sound?
Yeah,
groaning.
Yeah.
Mutual groaning. Mutual, oh, please.
Okay. And then Lisa says,
well,
I'm all for...
It is an option.
Well, it is an option.
Yes.
Lisa says, I'm all for education standards, but the amount of money that goes into Common Core is insane. It would serve our children if this money were put into their schools, art and music, creative and challenging thinking. And that's from Lisa. Libby and Rosemary is the title of Ted's missile. A fair review on the Common Core debate. It has become a political football and teachers' union football game. Thanks. And Jason says, I don't think you can have individualism in schools if parents don't have choice. Testing should provide data, which allows... We did that one. So sorry. And Elizabeth says, did any of you taking... Talking, I'm so sorry. Did any of you talking about taking the Regents take it in the third grade with your teacher's job on the line? The problem with that is that standardized test scores are being used to make way for the privatization and profitization of education. And John says, it's worse than blame the victim. It's blame the people who are trying to help the victims. And that's, let's see here. And I guess that's sort of it for now.
So,
except for George's.
Okay, go ahead.
There's so much. Rosemary is correct. There's so much politicking involved in the schools these days. It's difficult to actually teach. I was a substitute last year, and half of one freshman high school class I had didn't know that the USA had a civil war. Only two of them knew who won the civil war.
Oof. It's frightening.
That is frightening.
There was one a couple of years back where they showed them a map and asked them to pick out the Pacific Ocean. and most couldn't do it.
Yeah, I understand the need for creative thinking and critical thinking, and yeah, let's teach that. But there's nothing wrong with learning some stuff too.
Right, some facts.
Going back to the map reading, learning how to read the maps. Yeah. All right, let's go on to other stories. This story just came over, and I think we knew this was coming, but it's now somewhat official in the sense that Barbara Mikulski of Maryland has announced a press conference later today where she is expected to retire.
Really?
Wow.
Says she is retiring from the Senate after five terms in office, according to those familiar with her plans.
She got elected.
Yeah, that's
it
a long time.
Such a big deal when she got elected.
78 years old, the first woman to chair the powerful Appropriations Committee, a post that she had to give up this year when the Democrats lost control of the Senate. A social worker turned politician, she has been a forceful presence on many pieces of legislation, passionately liberal on certain issues, but also committed to working closely with Republicans. 4'11".
Yeah.
Spitfire and a Baltimore native, and has scheduled the press conference for, I guess, noon. Just said that she wanted to announce at the event that she would step down at the end of 2016 and not seek another term. And, of course, her retirement is expected to spark a wild primary on the Democratic side, with several of the seven Maryland Democrats in Congress taking a look at the race. So we'll see what happens there. But
mostly I'm booing an eye. My niece is a congressional aide for her. So she had just worried recently when the Democrats lost control that she would lose her job. She stayed on, and now this. Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I have a personal interest
all
in
right.
this. I better be all quiet.
Right.
Oops.
But it's a, I think, you know, to regardless of, well, I mean, it's hard to say regardless of politics here, but for what she accomplished and being just a fierce voice in the Senate and for so long and accomplishing what she has accomplished, it'll certainly be a loss.
I agree. I mean, I think she's terrific. So, but I think what's happening right now is that there's an assessment. You better believe that there's a political assessment being we need to take back the Senate, that according to the Democrats. And they are looking for the future and who they can recruit, who is vulnerable. So there's a lot going on that we're not privy to and that we're not going to be privy to. You know, she'll stand up there. She'll make a wonderful speech. But the kinds of stuff I'm talking about are going on as people make assessments as to, you know, how they can take back the Senate during the Hillary election and keep it.
I'm also bemoaning the loss of strong liberal female voices.
Sure.
Mikulski is certainly maybe the first. Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein. Who's replacing them? Who are the strong?
Is Feinstein stepping down?
Well, no, but she's certainly she's in the same age there.
Well,
so that's what I'm saying. It's coming.
Boxer is stepping down.
Right. So who are the young?
Well, even on the Republican side, you look at
Kirsten Gillibrand is
Olympia Snow and people who have stepped aside, and in her case, it was obviously just being fed up.
It is, by the way, a very hard job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a very hard job, and you know, you have to sit there. I mean, the running part seems to me is the fun part.
Yeah, but
then
the governing,
then
it's not
day
like
after
it used to
day,
be.
The doors, somebody knocks at the door, and yet another group comes in. They want something. And
it's not so much that it's the intransigence. The inability to be able to be bipartisan, even if you want to be, because the other side refuses to open the door. You know, it's that I think is what wears people down. It's not like it was when she came in 30 years ago and there was some sense of bipartisanship and people were working together. It's certainly not the Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan era where things got done.
Well, it's worse than it's ever been.
Right.
There's
and
no
this is, you know, nobody, they don't want to work together or some people don't want to work with other people. And I think that's what wears people down because you can't get anything done.
I want to get back to Rosemary's point because I think it's a really important one. It was one, actually, I was at church yesterday. I was talking to our priest about this. Of he was saying that a number, he's going to have another church that he's responsible for because there's so few priests in the seminary. And even though the numbers are improving, they're not improving great enough. And I asked the question of, you know, okay, but what are we doing to recruit? Right. So on this in this same subject. I mean, right. What is being done? Because we lose those voices, and what is being done? There's some very powerful PACs. There's some very powerful organizations out there. But what is really being done to say, okay, this is a real issue and something that we want to address to put women in these?
Well, you know, that's the way that Chuck Schumer got so popular in the Senate. He was responsible and did it extraordinarily well for recruiting the right people to run for the Democrats. That's a very powerful job. And if there's one thing that you know about Schumer is that he is a guy who thinks in terms of the doable. I mean, he is not a guy who's outside the box. And he thinks extremely positively about the recruitment and how to do it. And you just hope that the people who you support, let me put it that way, are up to doing it now, too.
I think a woman president would help a lot. That would say, okay, get into this game. And women's groups have to do much more than we have been doing to get women to run. It's hard to run. You get personally attacked. You have to deal with crazies. Your personal life deteriorates. Your privacy goes away. It's hard to be a public official. You don't get a lot of respect. And yet it's so important. And women have voices and causes that men don't. We need more women in these jobs. Yeah.
You know, the a couple of weeks ago, I was asked to speak to a group of students up at SUNY Albany for the Elect Her program, sponsored by AAUW, the American Association of University Women. And there's all these fresh-faced women who want to get involved in politics. And they were like, well, what happens if they don't like me? That was the question somebody asked me. I said, this isn't a popularity contest. You can't take it personally. You run because you believe in what you're doing. And if they don't like you, that's par for the course.
Well, I love what Rosemary said because, you know, there is a sensitivity to the personal attacks that inevitably come with this. And that's why I always tell my students, you know, be careful what you do when you're young.
Right. Don't put anything on Facebook you don't want your mother to read.
Yeah, we don't train our girls like that, though. We train them like, oh, fix your hair, look like everybody else, be nice, be popular.
Well, Barbara Mikulski didn't, you know, didn't win that way.
Yeah, well, she always looked good, though. Mm-hmm.
She's a very strong character, knows what she wants and demands it. She's a force to be reckoned with.
And they elected her, is my point, Rosemary.
Exactly.
They didn't say, is she a Barbie doll?
No, but most women are socialized to be a Barbie doll. And, you know, they're afraid of people not liking them. And that's why a lot of women don't get into this. I mean, there are some incredibly strong women in the New York State Assembly and the New York State Senate now, which is great. And, you know, hopefully they'll move up. But the problem is you have to have money to be able to run a credible campaign. And more people are looking to people who have their own money to do it. And women aren't in those positions. And when they are, it's Carly Farina, who is shilling for the other side.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
so, speechless are we, Alan?
No. I was thinking about Governor Cuomo was under some attack for dissing Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is the head of the Senate, the Democrats in the Senate, not including her more. And there's a pretty good example of, you know, a male, a strong male, who, if this is true, is not doing what he should to push an up and coming extraordinary woman.
Excuse me. Yeah. But to his credit, or what he will see as his credit, he has a woman lieutenant governor who we haven't seen hide or head on.
Where is she? Who? What's her name
right,
again?
Right, Kathy Hochul.
And simply the best story that has ever come out of the New York State legislature is the fact that Cuomo wants not only the wives of politicians in the legislature to tell every dollar that they have, but also the girlfriends, which has caused consternation, but not his girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
We got like 10 seconds.
The speaker, when there was a new speaker being considered, there was a strong woman contender. And she was not taken seriously. And the talk was, well, she has a high, screechy voice, and she's kind of insistent Cuomo would never go along with that. Come on.
She's a woman. Sorry. Yeah. A strong woman.
All right. We're out of time. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow with this very grouping. So we'll see you then. Thank you very much. And
thank you,
we'll be back after this.